You ever feel like you're drowning in information, like there's just so much to keep up with and not enough time in the day?
Oh, definitely. It's a constant struggle to stay on top of everything.
Especially in fast-moving fields like user experience, right? UX, as we all know it.
Absolutely. UX is constantly changing and evolving.
And one of the biggest questions people have about UX is, well, is it worth it? What kind of return can you expect on your investment? The big, scary ROI question.
Yeah, the ROI of UX is something that's been debated for pretty much as long as UX has been around.
So that's what we're diving deep into today, how the return on investment for good UX has been changing and what that means for all of us.
Right. We're going to be looking at some really interesting insights from usability pioneer Jacob Nielsen, one of the leading figures in the field of UX.
Definitely. We've got a whole bunch of his writings to dig into, plus, you know, our own observations and thoughts and even some material from an e-learning plan, all sorts of things.
It's a pretty rich mix of sources, all pointing to a fascinating story about how the value of good design has evolved over time.
Okay, so we're talking history, present situation, and a peek into the future of UX ROI, especially with, well, you know, the elephant in the room, right? Artificial intelligence.
Oh yeah, AI is definitely shaking things up.
Absolutely. But our mission today is simple. We're going to pull out the key insights from all these different sources so you can understand why the ROI of UX has changed and what this means for you going forward. No jargon, no getting bogged down in the weeds, just the stuff you need to know.
Exactly. Let's make this complex topic clear and digestible.
Digestible, I like that. So how do we even start unpacking?
Well, Nielsen talks about what he calls the three ages of UX, which I think is a really useful framework for understanding this whole ROI shift.
Okay, the three ages of UX. I'm intrigued. Let's start at the beginning, shall we?
Sure. So age one, Nielsen calls it the truly bad old days.
Catchy.
Yeah, right. This is basically from 1945 to 1995, so before most people had personal computers.
The pre-PC era, I'm kind of scared to ask, but what was usability like?
Well, Nielsen's word for it is abhorrent.
Abhorrent, yikes.
Yeah, he's talking about incredibly complex interfaces, documentation that only programmers could understand. Really, truly a tough time to be a computer user.
And I'm guessing investing in UX wasn't really a priority at that point?
You'd think, with such terrible usability, that even a small improvement would have a massive impact, right?
Yeah, low-hanging fruit and all that.
Exactly. But, surprisingly, it wasn't typical to see a high return on investment from UX improvements back then.
Really? Why not?
Well, for a couple of reasons. First, developing software was unbelievably expensive, so any extra effort, even on something like usability, was really scrutinized.
I can imagine. Every hour of development time was precious, right?
Absolutely. And second, the people using the software, often in businesses, didn't really have a choice. They were trained to use whatever the programmers created, so there wasn't as much pressure to make things easy to use.
So it was more like, here's the tool, learn it, and deal with it.
Pretty much. But of course there were exceptions. Nielsen mentions early UX teams at places like Bell Labs and IBM.
Right, Bell Labs, that's where Johnny Carlin and that whole human factors team really got things started, right, way back in 1945.
Exactly, and they had some incredible successes even in those early days. Like, did you know the design of the touch-tone telephone keypad in the 1950s was based on rigorous user testing at Bell Labs?
Really? I never thought about it, but it is incredibly intuitive, even today.
Right. And get this. It's estimated that that single design decision has saved a collective 1 million person years globally.
1 million person years from just one well-designed keypad.
Amazing, isn't it? But sadly, those kinds of forward-thinking UX efforts were still pretty rare. Nielsen actually describes his early experiences advocating for UX as being oppressed.
Oppressed. Wow. So the seeds of UX were there, but the world just wasn't quite ready for it yet.
Exactly. The focus was on getting technology to work at all, not necessarily making it a joy to use.
Okay, so let's fast forward to age two. This is what Nielsen calls the web explosion. 1995 to 2020. Sounds a lot more dynamic.
Oh, it definitely was. The web completely changed the game for UX. Suddenly, there was this huge demand for people who understood how to make websites usable.
Because early websites were, well, let's just say they weren't exactly user-friendly, right?
Yeah, that's putting it mildly. I mean, confusing navigation, clunky workflows. It was often a headache to use the web back then.
Oh, I remember well. You'd land on a page and have absolutely no idea where to go or what to click.
Exactly. And because usability was so bad, even basic UX improvements led to massive gains in key metrics like conversion rates and user engagement.
So just fixing the most obvious usability issues had a huge impact.
Huge. Think, like doubling your results. And because there weren't any established web design standards yet, even simple things like adding a clear navigation bar or a shopping cart art icon could drastically increase conversions.
So it was almost like a wild west of design, and anything that made things a little more familiar and intuitive had a big payoff.
Exactly, and there was a real hunger for that expertise. Nielsen tells this great story about how, around 1998, he was charging $10,000 for a half day of usability consulting.
$10,000 for half a day?
Yeah. But his clients were regularly seeing at least $1 million in increased business as a result. That's a 10,000% ROI.
That is an insane return. But I guess it makes sense, right? There was such a huge gap between what users needed and what the web was offering.
Absolutely. And we actually saw a similar pattern emerge with the rise of smartphones around 2007.
Oh, right. Because websites designed for desktop looked terrible on those tiny screens.
Exactly. It created a whole new set of usability challenges. And when companies started to address those, they saw big rewards, like Facebook, for example. They made a huge push to improve the usability of their mobile app in 2012.
I remember that. The app used to be pretty awful.
Right. But after they focused on making it easier to use, they saw a 20% increase in the amount of time people spent using it on their phones.
Wow, 20%. That's a massive jump. Mm-hmm. So it seems like whenever there's a new technology and the user experience is initially pretty rough, there's this huge opportunity for UX to deliver massive ROI.
Exactly. But as with all good things, this era of super high ROI couldn't last forever. Which brings us to age three, UX saturation.
UX saturation. That sounds a lot less exciting.
Well, it's not quite as dramatic as the web explosion, but it's the reality we're living in now. This era started around 2020 and is still going strong.
So what exactly does UX saturation mean?
It basically means that companies with established UX teams have already addressed most of the really obvious usability issues. The baseline level of usability across many products and services is actually pretty good now.
So all the low-hanging fruit has been picked, so to speak.
Exactly. Making further UX improvements now is much harder. It often requires really in-depth research and significant design effort, and the gains you see, like in conversion rates, might be smaller.
It makes sense, right? If the foundation is already pretty solid, it's harder to make those huge leaps forward.
Right, and this also means that the cost of doing user research has gone up. You often need to use more complex methods to uncover those more subtle usability problems. Plus, UX teams and their budgets have grown, so UX itself has become a bigger cost center for companies.
So the equation has flipped. Higher investment for potentially smaller returns.
Exactly. And this has led to some pushback. We've seen more scrutiny on UX research spending and even some downsizing of UX teams, something Nielsen refers to as the UX angst of 2023-2024.
UX angst, that sounds a little ominous.
Yeah. And traditional UX consulting agencies have felt the pinch too. They're not seeing the same kind of growth they used to.
So it's a more challenging environment for UX professions in some ways.
It is, but there are still areas of growth. Nielsen points out that newer companies and those in countries that are just starting to embrace UX are still seeing strong demand for UX expertise, like Poland, for example.
Interesting. So it's kind of a mixed bag depending on where you look, but overall it seems like the ROI of UX has definitely shifted. So let's dig into what's driving this change, this shifting ROI calculus, as you called it. What are the main reasons for these higher costs and smaller benefits?
Well, on the cost side, as we talked about, you've got the need for more extensive user research, like ethnographic studies, where you actually observe users in their natural environment and deep dives into user behavior data. You've also got more specialized UX roles emerging, like UX researchers and UX strategists, and of course, bigger UX teams with, you know, more layers of management. Nielsen even calls this UX pancaking.
UX pancaking, that's funny. So more people, more specialized skills, more in-depth research, that all adds up.
It does. And then on the benefit side, yeah, it's that diminishing returns thing. The biggest usability issues have mostly been solved. So now you're putting in a lot of effort to get smaller improvements. It's more about maintaining that good usability and avoiding major regressions.
So instead of making giant leaps forward, it's more about making sure things don't slip backward.
Right. Nielsen gives the example of website optimization with A/B testing. You might run a bunch of tests, each costing time and money, and find that only a few of them result in a tiny percentage increase in sales.
Yeah, that's a far cry from turning a $10,000 investment into $1 million.
Exactly. It's a very different ROI picture. And if you could compare the financial return from a UX project during the web explosion era to one today, the difference would be striking.
Okay, so let's talk about the elephant in the room, AI. How is artificial intelligence impacting all of this?
Well, this is where things get really interesting. Nielsen actually predicts that the AI revolution is going to temporarily increase UX ROI.
Wait, increase? I thought we were talking about declining returns.
I know, right? It seems counterintuitive. But the reason is that AI has the potential to significantly reduce the cost of UX work. Think about all the things AI could help with, both in user research and design.
So AI could help us do more UX work faster and cheaper.
Exactly. Nielsen believes that by 2040, AI could be doing as much as 75% of the UX work that's currently done by humans.
75%? That's a huge number. How would that even work in practice?
Well, imagine AI tools that can generate design options much faster than a human designer could. Or AI that can analyze user data and identify usability problems, that kind of thing.
So AI could be like a superpowered US assistant.
In a way, yes. And that could lead to a big boost in ROI, at least in the short term.
Okay, so short term, AI is a potential game changer. But you said temporarily. What happens in the long run?
Well, Nielsen believes that even with that AI boost, that long-term trend of declining ROI will eventually resume.
So AI isn't a magic bullet.
Not according to Nielsen. And of course, AI is going to create new challenges for UX professionals. We'll need to learn how to design for AI-powered products and services. That means understanding how users interact with AI, addressing issues like trust and bias, and even developing new design patterns for AI interfaces.
That sounds like a whole new area of expertise for UX folks to master.
It is, and the user interface itself is going to be crucial for building trust in AI systems.
Right. People need to feel like they understand what the AI is doing and why.
Exactly. Transparency, explainability, user control, those are all going to be really important design considerations.
So it's not just about making AI work, it's about making it work in a way that people trust and feel comfortable with.
And looking ahead, as UX ROI stabilizes, it's going to be increasingly important for UX professionals to align their work with standard business metrics.
So being able to show how UX impacts things like revenue and customer retention.
Absolutely. And even if those massive early stage improvements become less frequent, UX will still be incredibly valuable.
Right, because it's not just about making big changes. It's also about preventing mistakes and maintaining a high level of usability over time.
Exactly. And there are always going to be new frontiers for UX to explore, like designing for AI, voice interfaces, immersive experiences. Those are all areas where UX expertise is going to be in high demand.
So even though the landscape is changing, UX is still a critical field.
Absolutely. In fact, Nielsen argues that UX has become normal, not special.
Normal, not special. What does he mean by that?
Well, he means that UX has become so integrated into how we design and build things that it's no longer seen as this separate, specialized discipline. It's just part of how things are done now.
Which, in a way, is a sign of success, right?
Exactly. It means that UX thinking has become mainstream, and as UX matures, the return on investment will likely become more aligned with standard business metrics.
So less about those wild early-stage ROIs, and more about delivering consistent, measurable value. Okay, so for those listening who might be new to UX or just trying to wrap their heads around why it's so important, can we take a quick step back and define what UX actually is?
Sure. Nielsen's original very simple definition is, we make computers easy to use.
Which, of course, is just the tip of the iceberg now, right?
Right. Today, UX encompasses the entire experience a customer has with a company's products or services. From their very first interaction all the way through, it's not just about what you see on the screen, it's about the whole journey.
The holistic experience.
Exactly. And, crucially, you can't design the experience itself. You can only design the components that contribute to that experience.
So it's about designing those touch points, those interactions, those moments that all add up to a positive overall experience.
And at the core of UX is user-centered design. This means that you base your design decisions on a deep understanding of your users, their needs, their behaviors, their characteristics.
So you're not just designing for yourself or for what you think people want. You're designing for what they actually need and want.
Right. And you get that understanding through user research. It's about observing how people actually use your product or service, not just what they say they do.
And how does UX relate to all the other terms we hear, like UI and usability?
Yeah, people get those mixed up all the time. So the user interface, or UI, refers specifically to the on-screen elements that people interact with. The buttons, the menus, the layout, all of that. Usability, on the other hand, is a quality of the user experience. It's about how easy and effective it is to use a product or service.
So UI is what you see, usability is how well it works.
Right. And Nielsen breaks usability down into 5 key aspects: learnability, efficiency, memorability, errors, and satisfaction.
Learnability being how easy it is for new users to figure things out, right?
Exactly. Efficiency is about how quickly users can complete tasks once they know how to use the system. Memorability is about how easy it is to remember how to use the system after a period of not using it. Errors are, well, how many errors users make and how easy it is to recover from those errors. And finally, satisfaction is about how pleasant and enjoyable the overall experience is.
So usability is about making sure that the product or service is easy to use and enjoyable to use.
Right. And Nielsen stresses that while usability is just one part of the broader UX, it's a really important foundation. If people can't figure out how to use something, the overall experience is going to be bad, no matter how good the other aspects are.
Makes sense. And you also mentioned utility earlier. How does that fit in?
Yeah, utility is about whether the product or service actually does what users need it to do. It has to be useful. Something can be very easy to use, but completely useless if it doesn't actually solve the user's problem.
So it's like you might have a really well-designed hammer that's easy to drip and swing, but if it can't actually drive nails, it's not very useful.
Exactly. You need both usability and utility for a truly successful product or service. Ultimately, Nielsen argues that UX brings together science and empathy to make technology better for people, which in turn increases profits for businesses.
So it's a win-win. Good for users, good for business.
Exactly.
So if a company wants to do UX well, what are some of the key things they should keep in mind?
Well, Nielsen outlines a few crucial elements of a proper UX process. First, you need to conduct empirical studies with users who represent your target audience. You can't just rely on your own intuition or on what people within your company think.
Get out of the building and talk to real users.
Exactly. And second, focus on user behavior, not just what people say. Observe how they actually use your product or service, because what people say they do and what they actually do can be very different.
So it's show me, don't tell me.
Right. It's crucial to focus on understanding your users early on in the design process before you've invested too much in a specific solution. You've got to embrace iterative design. Build something, test it, get feedback, and refine it. No one gets it perfect on the first try. And finally, prioritize using fast and inexpensive research methods so you can iterate more quickly.
So it's all about testing, learning, and improving constantly.
Exactly. User testing is absolutely vital throughout the entire design process. Nielsen recommends doing what's called qualitative user testing or usability testing. And he suggests that even testing with just 5 users in each round can be incredibly effective.
5 users? That sounds like a really small number.
It does, but Nielsen's research shows that you actually uncover the majority of the major usability problems with those first few users. And testing with 5 allows you to quickly identify the big issues, make changes, and test again. It's more effective to do multiple rounds of testing with smaller groups than one big test.
So it's like a continuous feedback loop.
Exactly. And for those user tests, Nielsen has 3 simple but crucial rules. 1, recruit participants who represent your actual target users. 2, have them try to perform realistic tasks using your product or service. And 3, and this is perhaps most important, shut up and let them do the talking. As the facilitator, your job is to observe and listen. Encourage users to think out loud so you can understand their thought process.
That's where the real insights come from.
Exactly. And at the end of the day, Nielsen emphasizes that UX is about risk management. By testing and refining your designs before you launch them, you dramatically reduce the risk of releasing a product or service that's difficult to use, which can really damage your brand.
So we've gone from the bad old days of abhorrent usability to the web explosion, where UX had the potential for huge ROI, to this new era of UX saturation, where things are a bit more complex.
We have. And now we've got AI looming on the horizon, promising to shake things up even further.
So what's the big takeaway for our listeners? What does this all mean for the future of UX?
I think the key takeaway is that while we might not see those massive ROIs that were common in the early days of the web, especially in more mature markets, UX is still absolutely crucial.
It's just as important as it ever was. It's just different.
Right. The focus is shifting more toward maintaining that good usability, preventing costly mistakes, and understanding those deeper, more subtle user needs. AI is a huge opportunity, no doubt. It has the potential to boost efficiency and make UX even more valuable, but it also comes with its own challenges. We need to learn new skills and really think critically about how we design for AI-powered experiences.
It's an exciting time to be in UX, but it's also a time of transition.
It is. And as Nielsen put it, UX has become normal, not special. It's no longer this niche field. It's just part of how we do business now.
Which, in a way, is a huge accomplishment, right? It means that UX thinking has become pervasive.
Exactly. And as the field matures, we'll likely see the ROI for UX become more aligned with standard business metrics. That's not a sign that UX is becoming less important. It's a sign that it's becoming more mature and integrated.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, what's the one question you want to leave our listeners with?
I think the most important question for you to consider is, how will you adapt to thrive in this new normal for UX? The need to continuously learn, to embrace new technologies like AI, and to clearly demonstrate the business value of your work are all more important than ever. It might be time to reevaluate some of your own assumptions about what a good return on investment for US looks like in this evolving landscape.
That's a great question to ponder. Thank you so much for taking this deep dive with us into the world of US ROI. We hope this has given you a clear and insightful understanding of this really important topic.
And if there are any other topics you'd like us to explore in future deep dives, please let us know. We're always looking for new and interesting things to learn about and share with you.